Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Matt Harrison, is the author of our Book of the Month for March, Why Am I Joyfully Lutheran? Instruction, Meditation, and Prayers on Luther's Small Catechism. This new devotional resource is available in print and as an ebook. Learn more about Why Am I Joyfully Lutheran at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040 and request the Issues Etc. Book of the Month. Why Am I Joyfully Lutheran? We all know the names, Harvard, Yale, Princeton. We've got the Ivy League. They're considered to be the cream of the crop. If you really have the best scores, if you really are the most qualified, you might have a chance to go to one of those elite universities. The rest of us, we have to settle for something second best or third best or fourth best. What is this system of rails that we find ourselves on and we put our children on that from the time they get into the seventh grade, they are having to think about going to college? And the ultimate goal is to get into one of those elite schools. If your money or your grades can't get you in, then, well, you're going to have to settle for second best. And God forbid you would do something that doesn't require a college education or that university degree. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to talk about the difference between going to college and getting an education. Mark Hemingway joins us. He's a Washington, D.C. journalist for 20 years and author of a recent column for The Federalist titled, Do You Want Your Kids to Go to an Elite College or Get an Education? They're Not the Same Thing. Mark, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
You and Molly are the parents of elementary school aged kids, I believe, and most parents in your position are starting to think about how to get their kid and pay to get their kid into a Ivy League school or the second best thing. They're trying to figure it out financially and in terms of what their kid needs to do in terms of performance as well. Are you concerned about an Ivy League school or the next best thing?
I mean, absolutely not, which is not to say that I'm not, like I said, implied in the title, it's not to say that I'm not concerned about my children getting a good education. It's just that all of the rationales, you know, anymore for getting your kid into the best school possible just don't hold water the way that they did, I think, even 30 or 40 years ago, to the extent that maybe they ever did make sense. And, you know, all I see anymore, particularly since I live in the D.C. area where there's a lot of accomplished people and schooling is very competitive, the primary focus of everyone for their children at a very early age is getting them into the best college possible. And I just think that, you know, as we've seen with this big college admission scandal this week, these institutions are demonstrably corrupt, and we need to think very carefully about what it means to actually educate your children.
So let's talk a little bit about I didn't realize this until both my kids went through high school. The rail that our children are put on, especially in public schools, that says you are college bound. Now, there are occasionally kids shunted off to the side because of their grades or something. No, you're trade school bound. But most of them, you are college bound. You need to start worrying about that in junior high. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think part of the issue here is that we have let the education system sort of assert itself into all sorts of roles that for, you know, the bulk of human history have been assumed by parents themselves. I mean, ultimately, if you actually care about your child's education, you know, that is your ultimate responsibility as a parent, not the schools. So if you, the parent, are actively involved in what your child is learning, then yeah, you're going to make decisions about their education that, you know, are good. But more than that, you know, if you're stuck in a situation where maybe it isn't possible to get your child into the best schools that you want, you're going to spring into action and find some way to either, you know, educate them by alternative means, like with the rise of homeschooling and other things that we've seen, or, you know, make sure that they are, you know, the gap is being filled in other ways at home. You know, also, I think your role as a parent, though, is to think about what is a good education? And I don't think many parents are just thinking about that. I mean, we have been trained anymore just to think in terms of credentials and degrees and things like that. You know, when my wife and I sat down to think about what's the best education for our kids, well, you know, we thought about what is the primary goal of education? Well, our primary goals for educating our kids was to raise kids who continued to practice our Lutheran faith and that would go on to have stable and loving families of their own. And yes, to some degree, you know, career achievement and money are a factor in those decisions, but only insofar as, you know, having a degree and making money supports their roles as, you know, family, community members, and church members.
You say that educational philosophy, more than how well the school is rated or what people think of it, has dominated your educational decisions. What are you talking about there, Mark?
Well, I mean, for instance, obviously we send our children to a Lutheran classical school. So, you know, that's on two fronts. One is that we have decided that, you know, if you turn your children over to secular schools 40 hours a week, where the only morality they're going to get is in the form of, you know, anti-bullying PSAs and global warming, you know, fear-mongering, you are depriving your children of precious opportunities to inculcate, you know, values and, you know, morals and faith into them at an influential age. So, you know, that was, you know, certainly one decision we made. And the other part of it is that we belong to a Lutheran school that uses a classical education curriculum that rejects a lot of the sort of modern American notions about education. American education, as we envision it, has been hit by sort of this double whammy of bad intellectual frameworks. First, in the early mid-19th century, when America imported this Prussian model of education, sort of en masse, which was basically designed to institutionalize children so that they would, you know, sit still for 8 hours a day pounding widgets and, you know, not question their corporate overlords. And then, and later in the 20th century, we adopted this, you know, progressive philosophy of education as embodied by men like Thomas Dewey, who explicitly were saying things like, you know, I talked about a little earlier, you know, that these state-controlled educational institutions should supplant traditional parental roles, because if we want to progress as a society, we have to do what the state wants us to do, as opposed to letting parents have their say with, you know, their backward ideas about religion and other things. And, you know, we very much wanted to sort of, like, opt out of that system. And higher education certainly is a reflection of these days, you know, of a couple of things. One is the making money off the parental anxiety that comes with credentialism from colleges. And secondarily, taking kids that have been inculcated in these broken secular education systems and giving them what they want, because they're charging so much for education that the customer is always right, regardless of whether or not their ideas are bad, and these are young minds that need to be shaped properly.
Okay, you quote a friend of yours who is something of a mover and shaker saying, and here it is, "It's not an exaggeration to say that elite colleges are the central organizing obsession for a large segment of American society." What does that mean?
Well, I think one interesting thing about it is, as American society has become more secular, alumni networks and colleges and things like that have, say, you know, are starting to play a lot of the similar roles that churches and other local intermediating institutions used to play in terms of finding ways to organize people, you know, for different goals or have friendship networks and things like that. And, you know, if you look at how corrupt these, you know, especially higher education institutions have become, although public schools aren't a whole lot better and are plenty corrupt in their own right, that should be terrifying to us, that, you know, we are centering our identities around these, you know, educational institutions that are really just basically hedge funds by another name, essentially, at this point in time, who don't really care about, you know, meaningful educational outcomes and are demonstrably not producing meaningful education outcomes.
We were talking about this around the office the other day. I don't know why we were discussing accreditation of colleges, but we were. It's not a thrilling subject, but we were talking about these elite colleges, the names of which everyone knows, Harvard, Yale, Princeton, things like that. Nothing against the institutions themselves, but sometimes it's just the name that gets you in the door. They don't even want to look at your diploma as long as it does have Yale at the top of it or something like that.
Right. Well, it's a state school, right? So I could be said to have had a chip on my shoulder about these, you know, sort of educational credentials. But, you know, I work in Washington, D.C., and I'm surrounded by and have been for 20 years people who went to Ivy League institutions and have all sorts of, you know, credentials. And one thing I do think that is apparently clear, which is that the credential often doesn't, you know, mean a lot. And I think a lot of honest people who have gone to these better schools will tell you as much. I mean, yeah, I think it's true as a rule, if you've gone to an elite school, you're typically not an idiot. But at the same time, it by no means means that you are in a class unto yourself in American society in terms of what you know and what your educational capabilities are. But also, there's a secondary, you know, thing that we're dealing with here, which is in terms of the entire populist discussion we've been having for the past couple of years, centers to some degree around this idea of what kind of things we've been valuing in terms of education and career, which is to say that, you know, we're finding now that, you know, having a comparative literature degree actually doesn't do you a whole lot of good economically and otherwise. Meanwhile, for the past 30 or 40 years, we've been denigrating tradesmen jobs and things like that, that it turns out provide a high degree of personal satisfaction and actually pay quite well. So, you know, we really need to sort of reevaluate what it means to be educated. And certainly we as Lutherans who understand this idea of vocation should understand innately what that means. You know, we should do the things that we have talents for, and we should not look down on people that have to do things that we think are less glamorous or whatever, because we owe our existence to garbage men and janitors and people doing jobs of that nature as well.
Mark Hemingway is our guest. We're talking about the difference between going to college and getting an education. He's author of a recent column for The Federalist titled, "Do You Want Your Kids to Go to an Elite College or Get an Education? They're Not the Same Thing." What does this actually result in? We'll answer that question after that.
I'm going to talk about two big trends in American life over the last 50 or 60 years, the decline of institutional Christianity and the growing polarization of our politics.
Ross Douthat of the New York Times talking about his presentation at the 2019 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
The increasingly strident division between an ideological left and an ideological right. And I'm going to argue that Christianity has weakened precisely because people have become more likely to identify with ideologies than with religious beliefs, and that a recovered Christianity, a more robust public religious faith, is actually an answer to polarization because it gives people an identity that's bigger than partisanship, so they can define themselves as Christians first and liberals or conservatives second.
You can meet and hear Ross Douthat at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 7th and 8th in Chicago. Learn more at issuesetc.org.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Emmanuel Press is a Lutheran-owned business in Fort Wayne, Indiana, in operation since 2004. That's 15 years of publishing liturgical and devotional books, 15 years of collaborating with Lutheran authors, artists, and translators. Thanks to our loyal customers and Issues Etc., we look forward to many more years of confessing and teaching the Christian faith. Visit us online at emmanuelpress.us, E-M-M-A-N-U-E-L, press.us.
The Classical Liberal Studies major at Concordia University Chicago challenges you, through rigorous coursework, to connect history and innovation, applying classical concepts to a contemporary setting. Adding a minor in classical pedagogy will equip you to teach in classical schools and homeschools, drawing on Concordia Chicago's rich Lutheran heritage in the liberal arts. Learn more and apply now at cuchicago.edu.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the difference between going to college and getting an education. Mark Hemingway is our guest. If you're a member of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, check out the Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Lutheran FCU was formed to serve you and to serve the church. Learn more about their great interest rates on home, car, and student loans at lutheranfcu.org, lutheranfcu.org. Mark, we've been talking here about this rail that we put our kids on that drives toward college, and hopefully it's toward the most elite college possible, with the goal being almost kind of the brand of the college rather than the quality of the education. You say that the result of this is that the American bourgeoisie are not actually focused on their children's education. What do you mean?
Well, what I mean is that because the organizing principle in elite society anymore has become alumni networks and colleges, they see the credential itself and the access to the social networks provided by colleges as far more important as the actual educational component. And to some degree, they're not wrong. I mean, a big part of what we saw in this, you know, college admissions scandal is that people so firmly believe that having a credential from an elite university secures your upper class status that they're willing to, you know, cheat and pay for it outright as opposed to earn it. But it also speaks to the parents involved here, which is to say that they weren't involved in their kids' life to the degree that it was maybe necessary to actually have them earn their way into a good school, partially because it didn't matter. They thought that they could preserve their status for their children simply by, you know, cutting a check. And, you know, again, when you think about it, they're not entirely wrong. I mean, the big part of this scandal is that this took a system that we all knew was already stacked in favor of the rich and showed it to be so much worse in that regard than we'd previously thought. And I think that's what's truly sort of scandalizing people is, you know, the rich just, once they achieve a certain status, they'll do anything to preserve that status for their children, and that's not what this country is supposed to be about. It's supposed to be about meritocracy and income mobility and all these other things that it actually did very well for a very long time, and we were rightly concerned that that is breaking down.
I guess when I saw the news on the scandal, I just simply said, I didn't know that this was illegal. I thought that's how the rich got their kids into the top-notch schools, was
right,
by writing a check to somebody.
No, and the thing is, it is legal to buy a building on campus or whatever and get your kids into the school that way. There's a long story tradition of that. Around the margins, this did involve some tax fraud and some other things like that. But, you know, the real scandal here, again, is to some degree what's legal. And you might even say, is it the worst thing that these middlemen were introducing price competition here in terms of, you know, how these bribes are paid? But, yeah, I mean, it is definitely still a scandal about what is legal in terms of college admissions, whether it's buying your undeserving kid in by writing a check to development office or to someone who's going to funnel it into someone who has access some other way, or just all the other bizarre practices of admissions offices that are indefensible, like the elite college's well-known and well-established discrimination of Asian students. It's pretty clear that, you know, there's not a meritocracy involved in this.
Do you think it's possible that we now kind of have essentially a two-tier system? We have a system of schools that you either have to be incredibly high scoring in your qualifying exams or rich to attend. So a little bit of the meritocracy still preserved there for the sake of academic credibility. And then the rest of us who go to middle level colleges, or those who say, you know, college isn't for me, I can earn a good paycheck and a pension doing a trade, and it's hard work, but I'm not too proud to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is, we're definitely seeing a situation here where the upper class are, and elites in this country are setting up, you know, they're building up the barriers and, you know, pulling up the ladders behind them, you know, so that more people can't get in and threaten their own status. But at the same time, there are so many avenues out there to get a good education that didn't exist 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago, that having that Ivy League degree, I think, is continually being devalued, even as it's harder to get. And that's generally a good thing. You know, there's all kinds of online opportunities. You know, you're, like I said, mentioned earlier, you're seeing people en masse opt out of the system with homeschooling and things like that. There are plenty of, you know, colleges coming up that are challenging traditional curriculum ideas, go hearkening back to, you know, more serious and studious things like Hillsdale or St. John's College in Annapolis, which is a great books program. You know, there are enough people that recognize that there are problems with the quote-unquote liberal arts as we've envisioned them at, you know, universities as your ticket to, you know, permanent middle-class status, that, you know, they're starting to wake up and provide options, and that is, you know, completely healthy. But I think the main thing is that, you know, us parents have to sit down and ask ourselves in a way that's very true to our faith, what is education, and, you know, what are the goals and achievements we'd like to see for our children, you know, so that they are happy and that they are fulfilled and that they are saved, above all, and then act accordingly with regard to their education. Education is fundamentally a moral act.
You raise something that's very important, and you don't address it directly in your article, but I'd like you to talk about that, and that is the degree to which, and I think this is well known in Christian circles, kind of in the Christian enclave, but not as well known outside, and that is a lot of kids come from devout church-going families, go off to the university or even to one of these elite universities, and after a semester or two, they come home atheist.
I mean, yeah, that's exactly right. You know, it's not to say that going to, you know, college, you know, can't be a part of a good educational plan. But, you know, obviously you do have to remain vigilant about what that is going to do to your child. But more than that, you need to prepare your children so that before they go off in the world completely on their own, by the time they're college age, they have a strong grounding in their faith and their values and their ideas. And they understand when those ideas are threatened by people who, frankly, don't understand where you're coming from and don't, you know, have your beliefs and don't have your comfort in Christ, that when they try and threaten those, you know, you've got answers to respond to them, that, you know, you've got, you know, your own faith and other things that you can lean on when you're being challenged, such that you don't just, you know, get a personality lobotomy your first two semesters, which is, you know, what frequently happens. And a big part of that is because they don't take their education, both spiritually and, you know, academically, serious in the right ways at an earlier age. You know, you cannot turn your child over to into a horrible secular institution 40 hours a week, you know, where I was just on an email thread with a bunch of people I know. They were all trading horror stories about their kids in public school being asked to write letters to their local legislatures about, you know, gun control or the Green New Deal or all these other, like, politicized things. And you can't expect to put your kid into that environment and have them, you know, escape unless you are equally, if not more, involved in their lives in other ways and ensuring that they have the right priorities in terms of their faith and in terms of core academic ideas, you know, like objective truth.
You conclude your article for The Federalist saying, for the children, the result of this thinking is an elitist Peter principle at best and a generational existential crisis at worst. What do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean by that is that I think one thing here, and like I don't want it to be like, you know, your children's happiness being necessarily the ultimate goal. I mean, I think there are higher spiritual aims, but I do think that happiness is a byproduct of gratitude and faith and other things like that that are important. And I think so many people are so invested in their children's happiness that they shield them from, you know, things like, you know, consequences and, you know, difficult and challenging academic environments and things like that, such that when their kids actually do have to go up into the real world and they face this yawning chasm between what they think they're prepared for, what they're told they're prepared for, and what their actual capabilities and, you know, are, and what aspects of their character are up to the task of meeting really difficult challenges in life, you know, that they just sort of like fall apart. And we have a generation of people that are, you know, extremely unhappy and malcontent. We see these issues of mental illness and other things like that. If you look at the issues that are going on with college campuses right now, the kids at Sarah Lawrence just issued this like 90-part plan of demands from their college administrators that includes everything from being able to fire professors for writing newspaper columns that they don't like to demanding unlimited free fabric softener in their dorms. And it's like, how did you get such an entitled generation? Well, I mean, I think the answer ultimately is you have to blame the parents for not preparing them for what the real world is actually like.
Mark Hemingway is a Washington, D.C. journalist for 20 years. He's author of a recent column for The Federalist titled, Do You Want Your Kids to Go to an Elite College or Get an Education? They're not the same thing. You can read it under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Mark, thanks.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll talk with Pastor Hans Feeney about the vicious cycle of double standards on sexual morality. We'll discuss priestly celibacy during the Reformation with Dr. Ben Mays, and we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.